Yeah, I think there are two things that need to be observed and taken into consideration, because at the primary school level, we have universal primary education, which is free. However, there are other functional additional charges, because the money that government gives the schools as capitation grants to compensate for the school fees and operations of the schools is not adequate. So most of the school boards agreed with the parents, where parents would contribute money to top up the teachers' meager salaries, but also there were teachers who were not even on the government payroll and the schools needed them. Now the president is saying those additional costs became too big and have actually nullified the original objective of universal primary education, because some children have actually fallen and dropped out of school because of these costs. So those are the costs he was referring to, because they were not being well monitored by the central government system and also analyzed to make sure they do not prohibit children from coming to school as those costs kept on increasing.
But Fred, some people are suggesting that he has been president for a very long time. He knows the problem. Why hasn't he fixed it until now that he's seeking re-election next year?
Yes, of course, there are two things again here. One is he always gets his system to inform him, and sometimes the system is not as effective to give him the information. Let's not forget that some of the people may be having conflict of interest, because some of the people in government run private schools. So when these costs do come through and complaints do come through, it is possible somebody can hide this information from the president. So that's one route, that the information may not have reached the president. And now he's going around walking through the communities looking for a political mandate. He's able to interface directly without going through a system that may not be very efficient and picking up these evidences. That is one side of the story. The second part is, so initially parents might agree that can we contribute $1 every term? And the term in Uganda is about 90 days. And parents may see that as acceptable and affordable. But over years, you may find schools have added more things that have eventually become prohibitive. I've personally been involved on behalf of the ministry to check the causes of these costs.
How is this playing out among the population? And how can the opposition compete with such pronouncement from the president?
It doesn't disempower them. So any member of the opposition is free to come and engage it and come up with their proposal. The president may have said, I will remove it. The other people may come with a more positive way, because some parents are willing to make a contribution to buy food communally for their children who don't feed from the government allocation, but also to pay some of the teachers, because the government teachers may be few and they are needed more, and they are convinced we need these teachers and it is us to pay them. So there is a conversation that any member of the opposition can really present their message and let the people decide on the basis of who is speaking the best as far as this issue is concerned.
There have been reports of violence against opposition leaders or opposition figures. Patrick Amoriad, when he went to present his document at the Electoral Commission, Robert Kyagulanyi Obubuwain and his supporters faced a similar thing. And a lot of people are saying that sometimes perhaps the opposition leaders are to blame for not adhering to the Ministry of Health guidelines about the spread of the coronavirus. Some are also saying this is yet another attempt by the government to suppress the opposition in the run-up to the election next year. What is the situation on the ground when it comes to violence allegedly meted out by the Ugandan police or security agencies?
It's quite an interesting thing, and I think you have put all the facts in your question. So it's a very good question for people to engage, because let's not forget these are 11 candidates and only the two you have mentioned seem to be always on the confrontation path consistently with the police. You might be wrong, but don't be wrong on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and it becomes the norm, especially when the others are not even having a problem. So I think there are two ways about this. There are those who are going out to annoy the police, and of course some of them have literally said for them they are going to run their campaign in a defiance mode. Now, if you make that your label, then the police is also going to come knowing this one said he will always be defiant, not compliant. So I want to say in some cases it has gone overboard. Police has used maybe what we call excessive force and intervention. But in the light of not just affecting the presidential candidate, we have COVID for the first time going in an election. So police also has to avoid COVID. They can use it as an excuse or an escape route. So it's a question of how much force have you used. But there are some candidates who have shown they are going to confront the police no matter what the police say. We will not comply. I find that also not completely a blame on the police. The police may be blamed for excessive force, but if somebody has already said, me, I am going to run my thing like business as usual, then we really are preempting a ruthless police action. So we are watching police action, but now the good thing, as researchers, we have a sample of 11 candidates considered.